This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Teams. When there's more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
That is the phrase that pays.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I've never asked this rhetorical question on a Wednesday. So, are you ready for some football? That's Joe Hayden into the end zone.
Trace McSorley to Hollywood Brown.
Today's guest, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer, San Francisco 49ers CEO, Jed York, Pro Football Hall of Famer Howie Long, co-host of Peacock's Brother from Another, Michael Smith. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All righty then. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. I am your humble host, best dad ever, Rich Eisen, sitting right here with a blue sweater that matches the color scheme of the show perfectly. I'm just telling you how I'm doing it here on this Thursday, where normally week 13 would be kicking off, but we don't have a game because week 12 ended just yesterday. Chris Brockman, good to see you over there.
Hey, Rich Eisen, what's happening?
I'm hanging in there. Thank you very much. Mike Del Tufo's off again, making sure that the touching of gloves for whatever boxing event that he's doing the sound for that he has no idea about. I mean, honestly, he's not here, but Jason Feller, good to see you over there.
Good to see you too.
You got it. You were very busy before the show. Two new Mike Tomlin drops we're very excited to bring to the equation right here. Good to see you, TJ Jefferson. How are you, sir?
Hello, Richard. I just want to point out that we did check with you before our coffee run this morning.
Good. I appreciate that.
Stay off our back.
No. I'm Liz Weld of the Rich Eisen Show. Her expert celebrity booking. She came out here and made sure she got my undivided attention before she did go get coffee for everyone. And I made sure that she understood I was fine. It's not too difficult is really what I'm saying.
Hot chocolate for me, not a coffee drinker.
I had hot chocolate.
Yeah, not
as well.
A coffee drinker.
Okay, very good. Hey, everybody. NBA trade yesterday. How about that one?
Yeah, buddy, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, we'll get to the NFL in a second.
We've been talking about that all morning.
As you know, I'm an NFL guy. I would definitely usually lead with a Ravens Steelers game, but I just want to put that aside. It's very rare that you've got what would you say? Let me get this right. 16 figures of contracts all together, like a gross national product of a small nation, and all in one fell swoop. Hey, John Wall, since coming off of campus at Kentucky, hasn't worked out at all in the Washington Wizards. So let's package Colin Coward's favorite point guard and send him to Houston, where it clearly wasn't working out for Russell Westbrook since he wanted out. He basically said, I want out of here. And send him and hook him up with a guy who got a whole bunch out of him when he was at Oklahoma City in Scott Brooks, who they're apparently tight, like each other, like working with each other. Russell's now going to the nation's capital. They have the same monster contract that was serving as an anchor in either spot. Neither really wanted to be there anymore. And when I guess the Washington Wizards said to the new management team in Houston, we'll flip you one on top of it, sold. Done. According to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, the Woj bomb that it was Woj set off, bomb. He said that they hadn't spoken in weeks, both sides. And then it took just a few hours to get this thing done. Hey, our guy doesn't want to be here. Your guy doesn't want to be here. I don't know who's the first one who picked up the phone, but that's kind of very rare. Like, you've got a superstar. You've got a superstar. Let's swap superstars and see if they can be super as opposed to anything else. Right?
Exactly.
The meme I tweeted out was the famed, standoff meme of Spider-Man pointing to Spider-Man. And I guess that's the way I thought about it. Can't do any work. We're just standing off here. So
what do you got to lose?
John Wall and a first-round lottery protected 2023 first-rounder for those scoring at home. It'll be a long time before Houston turns that one in. Yep. And Russell Westbrook goes and hooks up with Scottie Brooks. Okay, let's see how it is.
Let's go.
And served for a lot of conversation, right? See how what Bradley Beal and Russ can get along. Yeah. And we'll see if John Wall and James Harden are going to mesh. You got to wonder who's going to have the handle right there. As you know, Harden likes to have the handle. And your first blush thoughts I saw on Twitter from a lot of people were, okay, I guess, here we go. Harden's going to really want to be in Brooklyn now. No, I'm, you know, Paul Silas, his kid, is the coach. New general manager, not named Daryl Morey. Russ is gone, right? And Covington's gone, right? And now here's John Wall. How are they going to split up the basketball here? Just when you thought, like, he really wants to be in Brooklyn now because he had a pickup game here with Kyrie and Durant, and they all got together as superstars, or particular rarefied air in the current NBA, get together. You know what? This is a lot of fun, breaking a sweat, having some fun. I don't know if that's actually sound paraphrasing. This is sort of the 51-year-old white guy version of it. So, you know, hey, you know, we're kind of all getting along. Let's see if we can do this professionally. Or something like that.
Kind of close.
Well, Chris Mannix says that Harden had exactly that sort of exchange with John Wall recently working out. So maybe this has received the bearded checkmark. And let's go.
Let's go.
And it serves for really great conversation as the NBA is tipping off 3 days before Christmas. It's December 3rd. You could do the math. That's 19 days. We'll do the math for you here best we can here on this show. 19 days away. And, you know, great conversation when two big star names, Wall's not working out in Washington, and Russell Westbrook is bouncing around the league now, and he needs to find a home and start winning some games, and they swapping, you know, teams, and Harden's working out with Wall, and he was working out with Durant and Kyrie, and the Nets, sending him to the Nets, just not going to really work out, I guess, because everybody who would have to fill in around Durant and Kyrie and Harden presumably would have to be sent to Houston in order to get Harden to go over there. And, you know, maybe somehow, some way, Morey can wave his wand and get Harden to go to Philadelphia. But, hey, he's working out with Wall and wants to play with him. A lot of information until this very morning. We are reminded it is just the reshuffling of deck chairs, is it not?
Exactly.
We're all having a good time on NBA Twitter talking about Wall and Westbrook and Harden and the Nets and Durant and Kyrie and the Sixers maybe and all of that stuff and Morey's in Philadelphia and, you know, about this, how about that? Anthony Davis made his move this very morning, signing a contract. Fresh new contract with the Los Angeles Lakers. He's staying put. And this is after the Lakers got LeBron extended for as much money, I believe, is left on the Wall and Westbrook contract. So, yep, they're not going anywhere. They're still together, and they're going to have Dennis Schroeder, you know, delivering the basketball there. And
you know what else isn't going anywhere, Rich?
The Clippers championship parade?
The Larry O.B. title. It's a wrap. Just, it's done. We had this talk before the show. It's over. How are you going to beat the Lakers?
Come on. It's 19 days before 3rd, bro.
You know how much it pains me to say this, right? I think my dislike for the Lakers has been well documented the last few months.
Very much so.
It's a wrap. It is a wrap. Barring catastrophic injury, I'll stake my claim right now on the 3rd at 9:08. The Lakers are going back to back. Ugh. I'm going to throw up in my mouth right now.
There you go.
Wow.
Boy, was Frank Vogel on the spot? Hey, Frank, here's what we'd like you to do. We'd like you to come call. How far removed are we now from the conversation of two summers ago that the Lakers were a total dumpster fire and Jason Kidd was just there as the coach in waiting of LeBron's choice?
A vulture coach?
Right. Frank Vogel was basically just there as a figurehead and just because Phil Jackson said, you know, this is not a bad choice right there. Rob Pelinka got it all done. This is, remember when Magic was firing, you know, verbal Molotov cocktails? By the way, great fantasy team name for your basketball teams coming up.
We also have bearded checkmark.
Checkmark, yep. Verbal Molotov cocktails via First Take, right? Remember when he held that press conference, I'm out of here, and you're all like, oh, God, LeBron is injured, and what's going on here?
I'm not going to be here.
I ain't going to be here. Right, which, out. How far removed are we from that right now?
Man, those were the good old days.
Anthony Davis going nowhere. And it's a smart choice. I know he even caused a little bit of a ripple effect, a slight seismic maneuver on the NBA Twitter Richter scale of him when he was in Chicago last year, pre-pandemic, having, some sort of public appearance with a bunch of kids, I think. And he talked about how his dream of playing for the Bulls and all that. Yeah, that ain't happening. Smart move. Play with LeBron. Win two more. If LeBron wants to play with Bronny somewhere else in 2 years, let him do that. And if he wants to play there, great. You can have a nice front row seat. It's Taco Tuesday every night, man. No problem. It'll be his team. Lakers will be Anthony Davis's team for maybe 6 years today, right? You signed for 6 years today?
Five-year extension, five years. Yeah.
Okay, extension. Fine. So for those 5 years, half of it will be his team. You know, unless LeBron wants to stay, and then he can win some more and sign another big monster contract extension, and he'll be in his, you know, early to mid to late 30s, and the Lakers will be his team. Live in Los Angeles. Have a good time.
Rich, you think LeBron...
Roll it out. Roll it out. Tell me I'm wrong. You tell me I'm wrong.
You think LeBron is the type that, like, I think he is, to take kind of a back seat as he gets a little older and be like, all right, this is your team.
No. LeBron doesn't. The only back seat LeBron takes is, you know, if somebody's driving him around and is in my box somewhere. I don't know. Driving Mr. James. That's for down the road, though. Right now, Rich Paul is just kicking back and having a day. Why not? Because LeBron James has set himself up in his dotage NBA years to be a perennial champion, which is what you want to do at the end of your GOAT run. Set up your legacy. For his legacy, he's going to win some more championships, and then his actual legacy, his son. LeBron's set. Smart. He is just us. He is one smart cookie, man.
Yeah. By the way, that
he is one smart cookie. Him and Maverick Carter and Rich Paul, they have this table wired right now, and they're hitting the point every single rollout.
The LeBron's posse, as they were called years ago, doing pretty decent for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
That posse turned out to be all right, didn't they?
844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We've got football on the brain, as always. Three guests, Albert Breer, Jed York, and Howie Long. Albert's going to be first up from the Monday Morning Quarterback from Sports Illustrated. Jed York, the CEO of the San Francisco 49ers. So much to talk about with him as his 49ers arrived in Arizona last night. That is their new home away from home for the next 2 weeks. Then they'll be back there to play a Week 16 game as a road team. They will have three games in Arizona. Two is the home team. One is the road team in their five remaining games, which, by the way, they have a chance to still make the playoffs at 5-6, and they played very well in Los Angeles. And on that flight to Los Angeles is when they learned that Santa Clara County had deemed the entire county to be free of any contact sports, regardless of the level of play, from youth all the way to professional. And there'll be lots to talk about with Jed York, how this all came about. Howie Long, top of hour three, as we've got 5 weeks to go once the Bucks and Panthers are done with their bye week this week. Everybody will have played 12 games, and we've got one quarter of the season to go, and let's go. As we take you to Brother from Another every day here on NBC Sports on Peacock, to the two Michaels, Holly, Michael Smith will join us to wrap up our show to take us to his show.
All right.
Now then, week 12 finally came to a close after the longest NFL week ever. A six-day long NFL week started on Thanksgiving, ended yesterday. Now then, Ravens and Steelers, we knew the game would be choppy and ugly. We knew it would not look very pretty. And the first half bore that out. Much of the game did. First half bore it out. But I told you when we left here yesterday that don't count the Ravens out in a rivalry game. And sure enough, the Ravens led after the first quarter. Okay, they led after the first quarter 7-6. I mean, this is how ugly the first quarter was. Big Ben throws a pick in the end zone on a fourth down from inside the 5-yard line where the Steelers are like, screw it, we'll go for it. Ben knew that the play was running out of time. He throws the pick in the end zone for whatever reason. The Raven who picked it off, whose name escapes me right now, doesn't matter, ran the ball out instead of taking a knee. So now the Steelers defense can pin RG3's ears back, and he sure enough threw a pick six to Joe Hayden. Touchdown, but missed extra point. Ravens can't move the ball offensively, but the Steelers put the ball on the ground on a muff punt, give the Ravens a short field, which RG3 cashes in with Gus Edwards, who's starting at running back, because both Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins were the first to have COVID on this team on the offensive side of the ball that started everything that led to, as we all know, a rescheduled Thanksgiving Day game, rescheduled three different times to Sunday, to Monday, to Tuesday, four different times, then to Wednesday. At any rate, it was ugly, and the Ravens' best chance to actually take, they could have taken the lead at halftime. Refs blew this one, man. I mean, there's no doubt the Steelers were lying on top of Gus Edwards as the Ravens, for whatever reason, you got to play better than the ref's ref, I guess. I don't know why you're running the ball on the Steelers' defense with no time left. I guess you figured that you could run the ball and then get up and throw a quick pass play, and there was enough time in which to do that. But when Luke Wilson had the ball dislodged from him in the end zone with the time running down, it was only 4 seconds left on the clock, leaving the Ravens with no chance to even get Justin Tucker out there to kick a field goal and get some points to make it a 12-10 game at half. It left no time left, and the Ravens had no chance the rest of the game. I mean, how it was not obvious to all the officials that the Steelers were basically setting up a picnic early dinner on top of Gus Edwards with the time running down, how they could not just blow the whistle and say, enough of this. Actually, we're stopping. It's delay a game. Move the ball, I guess, a yard or a few inches. Stop the clock and give the Ravens some time. But you got to play better than the ref's ref, and that wasn't the best clock management to run the ball down there. And the Steelers took care of business the rest of the way. And you know, at the end of the game, you know, Tirico and Collinsworth rightfully gave kudos to both teams. I mean, in the NFL and the pandemic, and we're all living in a pandemic right now, and we're all trying to figure out how to get from points A to B in our life every single day. And the NFL is a routinized operation. Coaches are the biggest control freaks on the planet. And to not know when you're playing a game and who's available to play a game and wonder why the NFL is making some of the decisions they're making. And you feel, I'm sure, all of you in the NFL that are on the wrong or on the decisions that the NFL is making you feel as an organization that you're being put upon. And then you as a coach are taking all this in but can't use it as an excuse. It's very frustrating. And so Tirico and Collinsworth both giving kudos to both teams as time ran out, I thought was very appropriate. And, you know, after the game, Mike Tomlin spoke to the press. And interestingly enough, you know, Mike Tomlin said the same thing. Like, you know, hey, I give kudos to my team for rolling with the punches and that they really didn't know which way was up. And you can't blame them for having a choppy game. Hold on a minute. I'm told it's the exact opposite. Oh, baby, classic Mike Tomlin, roll tape.
To be bluntly honest, man, I'm really disappointed in our performance tonight. We did enough to win, but that's all. It was really junior varsity, to be quite honest with you, and it was in all three phases. We couldn't run the ball effectively when we needed to. We dropped too many significant passes, very catchable, makeable passes. We didn't make significant plays in the special teams game. Our kickoff coverage unit wasn't good enough. We turned the damn ball over. We gave up big plays in critical moments on defense. Can't have it. They converted a long run on a possession down before the half. Unacceptable. They had a 70-yard touchdown late in the game. Unacceptable. And so we're fortunate tonight. It's good to proceed with the victory. I acknowledge that. But not a lot happened tonight to be proud of or to be excited about other than that.
Mike Tomlin, everybody.
Hey,
wow.
That's what we wanted.
Now, again, you can't blame him for being salty, whether he had probably just heard that Bud Dupree, his top-notch pass rusher, and we'll talk about this with Albert Breer in a second, that Bud Dupree, in what appeared to be non-contact, went down with what is feared to be an ACL injury. And seeing Deontay Johnson drop a ball on a third and goal earlier on in the game that led to just 3 points. And then to see Eric Ebron drop a ball on third and goal earlier in the game in the first half that led to just 3 points. Or the aforementioned RG3 run that on a third and long went half the field to set the Ravens up for that possible go-ahead touchdown that never happened at the end of the first half. Or, yes, the I forgot to mention Penn State's favorite home run hitter, Trace McSorley, hit a home run.
Sure did.
Didn't make that swing and looking, though. I mean, he's not there yet,
I guess. Scoreboard.
Hit a home run with Hollywood Brown, who's been waiting to hit home runs. He's been waiting to trot those bases.
Made it a game.
Ben had to float that third down pass into Nate Washington, surrounded by three Ravens, in order to finally exhale. I understand why Tomlin would want to get something off his chest, and at least he got that off his chest, and later on, you know, calmed down and kind of gave his team a little bit of credit. Oh, I'm told it's the exact opposite. He actually doubled down.
Roll Mike, tape. You had some red zone failures and a number of drop passes. What do you attribute that to? Anything in particular?
Us sucking.
Okay. Mike Tomlin, everybody. Us sucking.
Yeah, I don't think
soundbite of 2020. I don't know. That's the Hail Mary of coaching soundbites of 2020. That's the clubhouse leader. How are you going to knock a head coach in the National Football League, one as decorated as Mike Tomlin, giving the answer to the question of to what you attribute all of those drop passes and mistakes and miscues?
Sucking.
Thank you. New drop.
Two words, three syllables.
Good work, Jay. Good work.
That's it. Us sucking. Yeah, why haven't we gotten to Albert Breer on time? You got that drop?
Us sucking.
Okay.
Jay, why didn't we get pizzas for the group?
Mm-hmm. Sucking.
Thank you. I mean, we're just getting started. Literally and figuratively. Let's take a break.
Make my job easy.
We'll take a break. Look at Albert Breer joining us right there. This is back in better times when he came in with that Nantucket George Hamilton look. Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated coming up.
Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. With Together Mode, you can bring everyone together in one space in the same virtual room. You can bring the power of true collaboration to your projects with Whiteboard, drawing, sharing, and building ideas in real time, all on the same page. And with Large Gallery View, you can see more of your team all at once with up to 49 people on screen, all at the same time. You can even raise your hand virtually so everyone can be seen and heard. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams.
You've got Patrick Mahomes and the rest of that great offense that everybody has 100% owned on your fantasy league on national television. And I'd imagine we're getting to that spot where a few of those preemptories that Fox and CBS were allowed to put on the table and put their chips down in certain games left little choice. But to stick with a game in which I'm sure everybody in the league and NBC is happy that everyone's been released from COVID-19 jail, I guess, in Denver. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We're back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Lots to talk about in the NFL world with our friend from Sports Illustrated, the man who writes the MMQB every single week, my buddy Albert Breer. How are you, Albert?
I'm good. I kind of wish I had some Thursday night football, Rich. You know, sometimes we poke fun at it and everything else, but then they take it away from you and you kind of miss it, you know?
Well, you know what, Albert? I've been at the forefront of the everybody bashes Thursday night football until you actually watch it bus. You know, I've been driving that after spending, you know, almost 10 years sitting out on the set watching Twitter blow up about how terrible the game is. And then, you know, a Sunday or Monday night game is 3-3 after the first half and nobody complains about it. You know, I've been at the forefront of that pretty much. But hey,
I'm glad you're a pioneer in that regard.
Thank you so much, Albert. You know, but we did get a Wednesday game. We did get a Wednesday game. And I've got one more soundbite from Mike Tomlin to play, you know, that I'm curious to play for you and to get your thoughts on how the Steelers reacted to everything from the league this week. This was Mike Tomlin. If that second soundbite you played for me before the show, Don Bowie, here is what he had to say about preparing now for the next game.
Mike, you guys have a short week to address any of the problems that arose in this game. Do you guys have enough time to turn things around before you play Washington on Monday?
We don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's not some transformational thing that needs to transpire. We got to coach better and play better when we get inside a bowl. And so I expect our group to do that on Monday night or Monday evening, whenever it is that we play.
Okay, so now Tomlin, with that comment at the very end, you could tell he's had enough of the schedule changes. How did the Steelers take this entire past week, Albert?
I think, like, you look at their record, Rich. I mean, they've handled it just about as well as anybody. And remember, and it's easy to forget this because it feels like it was 10 years ago now, but they were the team that was on the other side of the Titans situation earlier in the year. So they had their bye week basically taken away from them too. This, you know, would have represented, this would have represented like the mini bye, and, you know, now that's gone. And so it's just, I mean, you look at what the Steelers have been through and you would think it'd be sort of a worn out team. And, you know, I think you got to give them a lot of credit for their resilience because they've sort of been dealt a bad hand when it comes to that. They fought through that. And then you look at some of the injury situations and how they've been able to find guys. I mean, you know, they lost Devin Bush, who's and you know as well as anybody how good a player he can be, a major part of their defense. And they've been able to kind of fill in for him with guys like Rob Spillane, and now they lose Bud Dupree. And so, you know, I think one of the things that – and it was interesting because I talked to Spillane after the game last night, and he basically kind of told me what Mike Tomlin said to them back in July when they reported for training camp. He called it necessary business in 2020, being able to kind of take all these things that are going to be different this year and turn them into advantages for the team. And so I think they've been able to do that. The record certainly shows it, you know, even in a day when they didn't have their best game. And I think that you heard that across the board from all the Steelers who spoke after the game. They didn't feel like they played very well. They were still able to come out in the right end of the scoreboard as they have every week all year.
Bud Dupree, though, right? We're expecting
huge loss.
It's how do they come back from that one? That's a big one because now that means presumably T.J. Watt will get the attention that he has not been getting because some of it has to have been paid to Dupree all season long.
Right. And, you know, like that's the thing. It's like Dupree had been, you know, over the first, you know, 4 or 5 years of his career, I think a little inconsistent. Great athlete, right? He was really raw when he was coming out of school as a first-round pick. But it's just a freak athlete and was really starting to come into his own. And it sucks for him personally, too, because I think he was really kind of set up to cash in on everything that he'd done over the last year or so. And that's probably not going to happen, at least to the degree it was going to happen after this year. And it's a huge loss for the reasons that you mentioned there. I mean, losing him really means that if you're, you know, an offense now, you can devote a ton of resources to taking care of T.J. Watt, who is absolutely a defensive player of the year candidate. So not only do you lose, you know, all Dupree's production, you also kind of lose the impact that he had on one of the best defensive players in football. And so, you know, now they turn to a rookie, you know, an Alex Highsmith, who's played a bunch for them and made some key plays, and a guy that they really like. He's a third-round pick, so it's not like the guy's come out of nowhere. You know, but they'll be leaning on him a lot, you know, and for a defense that's been playing really well, asking a lot more of him. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because it did feel after about 8 or 9 years of trying to rebuild, coming out of that, like, Troy Polamalu, James Ferrier, Lamar Woodley, James Harrison, that era, they'd really struggled to put together, you know, a great defense again, and it really felt like they were right there.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show, and in terms of the Steelers, you know, there's no, like, league bias towards the Steelers. I mean, if you really want to You know, if you really want to put a fine point on it, Dan Rooney was the one who knocked on Roger Goodell's door, you know, a hotel room door, to say that the meeting had just broken and he was the new commissioner of the NFL. So, yeah. I mean, but it is just the way the cookie crumbles, I guess, that the Steelers have been on the, you know, the wrong end, one would say, of the scheduling stick, and they have been undefeated through all of that. So, and I will touch on this subject with CEO of the 49ers, Jed York, coming up at the top of the next hour, about his team was on the short end of a Thursday night stick with Green Bay coming to town, and they were highly shorthanded due to a late positive test that really they weren't so sure was positive at the time in Kendrick Bourne. Just to lay it out here, the rules by which the NFL decides to push one game 6 days, or a game like Denver hosting the Saints, or that Thursday night Packers at 49ers, got to go. I mean, it doesn't matter how hamstrung another team is, got to go. What is this situation?
Yeah.
Best you can tell.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think we're on track. I dispute this, but I think we're on track for the league is scoring us accusations for a single year, right?
Right.
So we'll probably wind up breaking that record. But that's a circumstance we're all in. You know what I mean? Like, and I think, you know, at the beginning of this in July and August, I remember like the messaging that was coming out of 345 Park, and I think some of those guys maybe wish they had said it a little louder at the time, but. You know, what they were telling all of us was there are going to be inequities, and this is going to be sideways, and there's going to come a point in the year where it's not going to be fair. And we just have to accept that if there's going to be football in 2020, this is just what everybody signed up for, you know? And so I think that was sort of like that's the message I've gotten pretty consistently. And again, this isn't revisionist history. This is going all the way back to the start in the summer. And really, you know, like to answer your question, Rich, like, the actual standard, right, is spread of the virus contained? And they felt like the Tennessee situation, it wasn't contained. They felt like in this situation with Baltimore, it wasn't contained. And that was proven by the fact that the Ravens got positive tests back, like just as they were boarding their flight for Pittsburgh. And, you know, they finally got to the point where they felt like it was contained and they could explain those too. But there was concern on the part of the Ravens players. You know, I can tell you, like, they felt uneasy about getting on that plane. And so, you know, I think, you know, really the standard here is, can the league prove that the spread of COVID-19 is contained? In Denver, if you look at, like, what happened there, really, it was one case, right? Like, so it was the case of Jeff Driscoll, and then the other three quarterbacks didn't have it, but they were close contacts. So, like, does that suck? Yeah, it sucks. That's a really tough circumstance for a team have to deal with. Is there medical risk by putting the Broncos in the field in that case? Not really, right? Like, so I think that's what you have to look at. Like, if you want to look at the league, and I'm not saying that the league's done everything right here, like across the board all year, but I mean, I think they have been pretty consistent on this, that if there's a medical risk, we will look at postponing games. We will look at potentially, if it comes to that at the end of the year, canceling games. But if it's about a competitive issue, we're not going to, like, that's not going to fly. Like, that's not going to be the reason why we postpone or cancel a game, because the goal, again, is to get all 256 games played.
A few more minutes left here with Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated, senior NFL reporter, the MMQB, here on the Rich Eisen Show. What do you know about Breeze? Is this, do you think, going to be the final start for Taysom Hill, or it may last further his Breeze's absence due to his ribs? What are you hearing about?
Yeah, I think part of it's just going to be like functionality, you know, and pain tolerance and those sorts of things. And I can't, like, I mean, God, if I crack one rib,
right.
Rich, I can't sleep. You know what I mean? Like, so it makes me cringe thinking of what 11 cracked ribs feels like. So I think part of it's going to be just how functional he can be out there. And I don't think they're going to know ahead of time. Like, I think that's the other part of it. Like, do they feel good about where he is and that maybe he could start in a week or two? Yeah. Will they know until he's there? I don't think they'll really know, you know, and I think this is going to have to be a day-to-day thing based on the nature of that injury. And so, look, the good news is they've got a team that we've seen is capable of winning without being electric in the passing game, which, I mean, I think is if you look at past Saints teams, they were so reliant on Drew Brees in that passing game. It shows you what sort of spot that roster's in. And, you know, to win 31-3, even though the Broncos were in the situation they were in, and look at how dominant they were throwing for under 100 yards, I think it shows you really where the Saints are from a team standpoint. And so I think having what I believe is the most well-rounded roster in football right now gives them some leeway to be patient with Drew Brees if they want to be. And, you know, really, I mean, what's the goal here? The goal is to have Drew Brees in the best possible place that you can on January 4th, the day after the regular season ends, and you're getting ready for the playoffs.
And the game Saints-Falcons is fascinating because of what Raheem Morris has been able to do.
Yeah.
As the interim head coach, he and interestingly enough, two big division games for the interim head coaches as Romeo Crennel, just like Raheem Morris, both teams 4-3 under their interim head coaches since the firings of Bill O'Brien and Dan Quinn, respectively. Do either of these guys have a shot at the 2021 gig? Do you think, Albert?
Romeo Crennel, I'd say no, and I still think Houston's figuring out a lot of things, I'll put it that way. What road they're going to go down as far as the general manager, what Jack Easterby's place in the organization is, you know, like whether or not, like, is it possible, like he could be gone? Like, there's a lot of unanswered questions in Houston. And I have a hard time seeing where they wouldn't be resetting at the very least at the head coach and general manager positions. As for Atlanta, I do think Raheem Morris has a very real chance there. He's got a relationship building. Rich McKay's, of course, worked with him. They both have ties back to Tampa.
Yep.
And I think you have to kind of like rewind back to the beginning of this year. And, you know, I made calls on these sorts of things over the summer. And, you know, Raheem Morris was one of those names who, like, all right, like, this guy's ready for his second chance. And a lot of the reasons why people liked him 10 years ago, they're still there, and he's grown up a lot. And, like, the people in the Atlanta building really respond to him. And this is the second year in a row now we've seen this sort of response. Remember, last year, when he was elevated to defensive coordinator, the Falcons caught fire. And now you elevate him to head coach, and they've caught fire again. And so I think, you know, a lot of the reasons why people saw him as a potential head coaching candidate back in the summer, those are still there, and now he's bolstering his case with how the team's playing here down the stretch. He's still really young, and you know, I really think that this is a guy who could wind up being a really, really good find for somebody in his second shot as head coach, and it's something I think the Falcons have to consider now. You know, you look at like Anthony Lynn when, you know, the Bills fired Rex Ryan a few years back, how Anthony Lynn really kind of showed who he was and wound up earning the Chargers job off of what he had done as an interim coach with the Bills. Like, I think we're seeing the same sort of thing with Raheem, and maybe it's enough where he doesn't have to move and the Falcons wind up naming him the head coach. I'm not saying that's absolutely going to happen, but I think it's at least now in play.
I mean, if Todd Gurley had not accidentally scored, you know, I mean, they'd be 5-2.
5-1 with him, yeah.
Right, 5-1, that's right. 5-1 with him. I mean, very... very impressive what's going on right there. Before I let you go, have you used any of your resources to inquire whether the Big Ten will, in fact, change its rules about how many games a team has to play in order to be eligible to win the conference championship with what's going on with your Buccaneers? Is that possible?
Well,
do you think that's possible?
Well, as you know, Rich, I'm about the collective, right? Like, I'm really about what the collective good of the Big Ten Conference.
No, I know you are.
You know, like, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking for. And is it good for the conference if you're hurting the college football playoff chances of the conference?
Well, I mean, what's the point? In all honesty,
right?
Albert,
it's good for the conference.
In all honesty, Albert, what is the point of having gone through the season if the season, the way that it has gone, let's be honest here, did give credence to those who are like, why are we playing at all? But you actually endeavored to play. Why have a rule that is in place that clearly doesn't affect anything at all? I mean, I think the rule was probably in place that if everybody was playing, you know, like if one team was 6-0 and another team was 2-0, then that team that's 2-0, no matter how many star recruit athletes they have, they shouldn't have a chance to, derail the 6-0 right. team. You know what I mean? Like, I understand why having the rule in place, but the way that things have gone, there is no reason to, what's the word for it? Kneecap, poleaxe Ohio State's chances of going yeah. somewhere because of everything that's gone on with the virus. There's no, so do you think, I know Barry Alvarez actually yeah. said something about it yesterday, saying we should talk about changing the rule. Do you think that can actually happen?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's like, and I think it's just, look, like, I don't think we can look at rules that we, but like in every sport, like rules that we basically all made up on the fly, right?
Right.
So these aren't rules that have been in place for 30 years.
No, you made it up that you had to play six games in this pandemic. You had to play at least six
right.
games in this pandemic to be eligible.
Based on what you knew in September. And so is it that crazy to make up a rule, to change a rule now
no.
based on what you know in December? No. And I do think, like, one of the things that's key here is the head-to-head, too. How would you look at Indiana? Like, is that a legitimate Big Ten championship? If Indiana winds up, say Ohio State, like, say the college football playoff puts them in, and, Ohio State wins the national championship, right? And they do it after playing in the second-place game in the Big Ten. So they play against Wisconsin that championship weekend. Like, does anyone remember Indiana as the real Big Ten champion then? No. I think Tom Allen and those guys have done a great job at Indiana. They deserve a ton of credit.
But they didn't beat Ohio State,
though. They lost a head-to-head. And that game,
right.
if you watch that game, Indiana showed great heart. Ohio State went up 35-7 and fell asleep. You know what I mean?
No, I know, Albert.
I don't know.
That's what I'm
and
saying. Look,
part of me,
you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You can change the rule. I think that the NCAA or the FBS writ large should change everything. Like, it's like, why are we sitting here watching BYU schedule Coastal Carolina so both sides can beef up their resumes when we could just expand the playoffs and let everyone play and not cross vectors nationally when it's all on the line? Like, what are we doing is essentially
that to me,
what I'm saying.
Rich, thank you.
What are we doing?
That to me is so perfect. Like, wouldn't this be, like, if you were the college football playoff, wouldn't this be the perfect year to just float the trial balloon of the 8-team playoff and see how it works?
Right.
Why not? Right.
Like baseball expanded their playoffs. Right. Exactly.
Right. You get a free look at what it looks
exactly.
like, too. Right.
Right.
Like, so you can go back to four teams next year, or maybe it works so well that you want to go to 8 teams permanently. Right. They have a free shot at potentially going to 8 teams here, or even 16 if you really want to get crazy about it. But either way, you have this free shot at it. There's like a logical reason to do it. I'm with you 100%. Throw Florida in there. Throw Texas A&M in
right.
there.
I mean, what
throw BYU in there. Throw Cincinnati in there. And like, I just think it would be so
Let's
much
go.
Fun to have that sort of thing. And I can't imagine any school would be against that. If it really works, and if it's something that you were thinking about anyway, which I think that they have thought about expanding the playoffs, why not in this weird, different environment? Why not just take a shot at it? And
right.
if it works, great. If not, you go back to 4 teams and, nobody's worse for the wear.
I know we're up against it in the radio business, and I apologize to our radio partners for going a little bit longer with Albert Breer here. But while I am being reasonable and have shown my reasonableness by pounding the table for Ohio State and the Big Ten, can we all agree it's insane to suggest Michigan is ducking Ohio State using COVID as a shield?
Yeah.
And maybe to try and kneecap your chances.
I had some fun with that. But you know what? Like, what I
Come
know
on.
About Jim Harbaugh,
Please.
What I know about Jim Harbaugh, having covered him when he was in San Francisco, I don't think that's really in his personality to do that.
Come on. I mean, it's
he's, as you know, as well as anyone, Rich, he's a different dude. Like, ducking
right.
people is not in his personality.
Yes, in his personality, by saying don't eat chicken because it's a nervous bird. Yes, that's there. But ducking is that's okay. I'm glad we can at least agree on that in part.
I had
ways.
Some fun with it earlier in the week, but I think it's kind of a funny idea. But like, there's no, I don't think those kids would want to duck Ohio State, and I certainly don't think that coach would want to. I mean, I remember watching him coach in 2014, the building was like on fire in San Francisco, right? Like, that thing was, I mean, that was not a good situation. And you know what? like that team kept swinging till the end, and you had to. This is the one thing at the end of all of that, like that anybody, no matter what you thought of Jim, like you had to give him credit. Like that team kept swinging all the way till the end. So I can't imagine that like he would be concocting some plan to try and duck Ohio State or try to screw them out of the playoffs. It just doesn't seem like that's in his personality.
Yeah, and using COVID as that cudgel as well. Albert, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. You take care. I'll read your stuff on Monday as always, and let's stay in touch. We'll have you back on.
Awesome, awesome. Stay safe out there. All right, guys.
Right back at you. That's Albert Breer. You're on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, now let's take a break. We'll be back in 2 minutes here and set up the rest of the day, including Jed York, who was in charge of that aflame building back in 2014. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live, drawing, sharing, and building ideas with everyone on the same page. And make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Save by the Bell is back. Bayside is back. Get so excited. Why not? Peacock Original started streaming last week, streaming right now. Familiar faces, fresh faces, same old great fun comedy. I added that part. Saved by the Bell, a Peacock Original, streaming right now on Peacock.
I'm so excited.
You see how I had a reasonable conversation with Albert Breer about college football? Reasonable conversation.
It's nice when you guys can be, you know, be civil and have that type of convo.
I as you know, I despise the Scarlet and Gray and the Ohio State with every fiber of my being.
But we do love Albert.
But we do. Oh, and I love tons of people for whom the Ohio State means so much. But I understand that if there's a rule in place that says you have to play six conference games in order to be eligible to play for the conference championship in a pandemic, and thus, if you don't play for your conference championship and therefore win your conference championship back here on our radio network, reviewing what we just talked about with Albert Breer, if there is a rule that says you have to play six games in conference to play for your conference championship and you don't meet that criteria, thus you can't win your championship, thus the committee that chooses which four teams gets to play for the ultimate championship, you'll be left out. There's no reason for that to be forced to happen if you can change the rule. Right. I mean, what are we doing here? And I understand what the rules are before the season. As I mentioned to Albert, the reason why I'm sure the Big Ten said you got to play at least six, knowing that the season would have no back end. We're talking about week 18 in the world of the NFL. Hey, at least they can tack on games at the end of the season as a last resort. You can push, technically, you could push the Super Bowl to whenever, because it's not like there's some concert or tractor pull that is on the docket for Raymond James Stadium in February or March, where sorry, we're all booked up, like hotels and everything. You know, nothing's booked up. So you have that back end to push. So does college football, too, by the way. You know, nobody wants to do it. But the reason why I bring it up is the Big Ten basically said there is no pushing. Like, we're not going to reschedule games. We're not going to postpone games. We're canceling games. If it can't be played, that's it. It's done. So the reason you put something together like this is, let's say you've got a team that has won every game, which would I think would be 7-0, right? Because I think it was 7 regular season games, whatever the heck it was. I don't know what off the top of my head. As you know, I've been
checked out.
I've been turning off certain Big Ten games midway through these days. But just because I have enough, I need more positivity in my life. But whatever it is, I understand. Like, so one team's played all their games and won, and then another team's been dealing with a ton of unfortunate COVID issues and has only won 3 of their games. You can't tell the team that's won every single one of their games, sorry, you've got to play this 3-0 team, because they've got a ton of 5-star recruits and have, we think, the best chance to win it all if they catch fire. And you also can't tell that 7-0 team if they're in the same side of the conference, same division, you don't go for the 3-0 team. I totally understand, but it's been so out of whack. Everything's been so out of whack. There's no reason to tell Ohio State, and this is from the Wisconsin athletic director.
Right.
There's no reason to tell Ohio State this rule that we came up with before we started a season that most of our presidents didn't want us to start anyway. can't be changed. So good on Barry Alvarez to say that. I mean, let's get together and make this change. Let Ohio State play. And again, it's they've already beaten Indiana. And you take a look at the division that they're in.
Yeah, it's Ohio State and Indiana on the east side.
Right, and they've already beaten Indiana.
Right, and on the west side, Northwestern's 5-1. They kind of lead that side.
So let's have Ohio State, having beaten the only other team that's there. As you know, there are world beaters, and there are those beaten by the world. The rest of that division's been beaten by the world, or they're beating each other up. Michigan State beating Michigan. Michigan beating Rutgers. Can't believe I'm saying that, but that's, you know, I'm running out of room. But honestly, Big Ten should just make this change. And then how many times, I mean, we had Greg Sankey of the SEC on, the commissioner of the SEC. I love that guy. I love our conversations, you know, whether it's him, you know, speaking honestly about the situation that he's in, about, you know, I'm not an epidemiologist, or, you know, humble brag dropping that he's in, you know, get ready for his 30th marathon of his life. Remember he said that?
Yeah.
I mean, he's in a tough spot, but he's a big mover and shaker. Expand the playoffs. Why are we sitting here saying, BYU, great season? We don't know really if you're tested enough for us to make a decision here. In Coastal Carolina,
yeah,
you too. You know, I mean, we don't know if you've done enough to show that you're worthy here. Certainly not against the blue bloods like Clemson. Why don't you guys schedule each other and fly across the country and cross vectors now, as opposed to just saying, stay where you are, you're all in, we'll cross those vectors when it's one and done. Come on now. What are we doing? And I know that Sankey said at the time they've had preliminary discussions. Let's have more than preliminary discussions. Major League Baseball expanded their playoffs. The NBA and the NHL freaking bubbled up and came up with, like, play-in games. Come on. The NCAA basketball folks have already said that they're going to have the tournament in one spot, right? And the NFL may have in Roger Goodell's top right or left-hand drawer something that is totally radical, ready to go, because they have to. Why is college football saying, no, we're just sticking with the plan? What is going on?
If not now, when?
Right. The NFL might expand to an eighth playoff team. They were already talking about that. And one of the things I want to talk about with Jed York are contingency plans.
That would get Dallas in, right?
No, it would not, sir.
Okay, yeah, gotcha.
Nope. So, you know, the NCAA should just do something radical. Why not? All of us fans wouldn't say, well, you're changing, you know, rules midstream. I don't think a single fan would say that. And let's go.
2020, and you throw all the rules out.
Right, and tell BYU and Coastal Carolina and everyone else, you're all in and you think you're good enough? Well, great. Guess what? You're in. Now prove it.
I'll beat Alabama.
Fact. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Jed York, the CEO of the San Francisco 49ers. And Chris Brockman's news update and your calls coming up. Look at Jed York. Look at Jed. 40-year-old CEO of a National Football League team, fresh off of being the defending NFC champs, or they still are, fresh off of a Super Bowl season.
I mean, he's been CEO since he was like 30.
And he looks 25.
Question is, and, you know, I don't know if he's out there watching right now prior to calling in, which he's going to do in just
a few
minutes.
Why wouldn't he be rich?
I don't know, because he's a busy man. He's got things going on.
Yeah, but
I'm just wondering,
show.
Is he going to drop that Notre Dame is 2 overall and his former employee? He won't go in the Harbaugh direction. He's way too classy for that.
No, but he'll talk about Notre Dame with you.
Probably.
Or do I just front load it and bring it up?
I see if he goes for it, and then if not, then you can bring
it up. Yeah, but you know I don't really do that.
I'm trying to give you some
advice. I know.
Advice.
You know I force the issue.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're still working on nicknames.
Yeah, Metcatron.
DK, Dark Knight. It's right there in the initials.
Oh, he's the Dark Knight.
It's right there.
He's wearing a human bat suit.
That's what I'm saying. It's right there, right
he's
in front
the Dark
of us.
Knight.
It's already written.
He's the Dark Knight.
Or the Metcatron. Or the human chunk play.
Wow. I'm so excited.
Thanks for not playing the Tomlin drop right there. I appreciate that.
Hit it before break, Jay.
Oh, my gosh. Jed York coming up here on the San Francisco 49ers. Okay, now there we go. Very good. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room, collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.